Welcome to the We Leaders podcast, where leaders share how to leave a legacy that makes history. I'm your host, Elena Fulvio. As a 13-time world record-holding skydiver and Olympic development athlete, psychic intuitive, and former Silicon Valley in-house talent advisor for some of the most legendary leaders and successful companies in history, there is a new bar being set for leadership. They're called We Leaders. What this means for you on this show, We Leaders will show up for you and bring their unapologetic truth, most successful strategies and mindsets so you can level up. We share from our shoes so you can walk in them. Here, the only rules are authenticity, respect, and being in service of every human having the lives they want. Join the movement. Welcome to the We Leaders podcast. Now let's go make history. I am so excited to have my friend Julian Valadurague here today. He is not only an outstanding entrepreneur, founder, CEO, serial actually. He's an advisor. He's London Young Entrepreneur of the Year, one of the years. And he's an international, I like to call him a phenomenon in a lot of ways because he balances the work as well as the personal life when it comes to creating profitability in his life. And so welcome, Julian. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your time and yourself and your story with us.
Thanks, Elena. Great to be here.
Awesome. So wait until the end, by the way. You're not going to want to miss that. He has some nuggets of gold he's going to bring in, and he has a really special offering. And if you have even the remote chance of meeting him, it'll be worth it. So let's kick off. I want him to get into his story as well. I want him to talk about, you know, through the lens of the profitable leader, right? It's like we all want, and you out there, you want profitability. Who doesn't? And Julian has a really great story and some insight into how he's succeeded, how he's become who he's become, because it's not by chance and it's not by him sitting back in his home doing nothing. So tell us some of your story, Julian. Tell us how you arrived, where you arrived, and some of your messes to successes and some of the things you've achieved.
Yeah. So where do I start? So I think starting at my last year at university, so during my master's, meeting my business partner, Tony, and deciding to found our own sort of digital agency. That's where it all started. And ever since, that's now already, say, 8 years ago, ever since, there's been some pretty heavy ups and downs. But overall, a good way forward. We've both learned a lot in many different aspects. But let's put it like this, the last 2-3 years were quite good. Before that, I'd say we had a pretty rough year. We took a lot of decisions that were probably not in our favor. Mm. And before that also, we had some pretty good growth. So I'd say it was, yeah, there was ups and downs, but overall upwards.
Yeah. And this is MBJ, correct?
Correct. That's MBJ.
Perfect. Yeah. And you're the co-founder with your partner of MBJ. Tell us about that, because I think that's really interesting. And again, as I know, as a founder myself, I would love it to be a straight line of how you get to success and profitability. But as you just alluded to, it's always that swirly human line. Can you share some of those where, because that was a really like a vulnerable share in regard to it didn't all just happen perfectly. Can you share, because we would love to advance quickly to profitability or business growth. What were some of those aspects that you tripped and fell and went, oh, I wish I would have known that. And how did you correct?
Yeah, I think we really we learned by doing, because we both had very little experience in corporate because we just finished uni. We had done some internships, you know, so a lot of people told us you should really just first get a job, whether it's in finance or consulting, get some experience and then start your own thing. And so we started off on that foot, most people being like, you shouldn't be doing this right now. You just, you know, you could do a lot of cool things right now. Starting your own thing is so risky, especially living in London, high cost of living. We still did it. So I'd say in the beginning, it was more about just believing in ourselves and each other and pushing each other forward. And I think if I had done it on my own, I would have not done it, because whenever one of the two of us had a low, the other one was able to sort of balance it out and push it forward. And that's still how it is today. So on bad days, everyone has a bad day sometimes, but it helps to have another person there to sort of balance it out at least. Yeah. And I think we were just very optimistic all the time, which led to us growing pretty fast and getting some really big projects. But in 2017, it just we grew way too fast. And all of a sudden we said, okay, we need to slow down a little bit because we're not going to be able to cover the cost of this big team and these offices and whatever we're doing right now. So I think in the beginning, this motivation and this extreme optimism, now looking back then, it didn't feel like extreme optimism. It felt like, yeah, we're doing the right thing. But looking back, I was like, wow, we took a lot of risk, you know, man. We signed a 2-year office lease, just being able to cover 1 month of rent, for example. You know, we hired new people knowing that we're going to be able to cover 2 weeks of salary. So it was a constant rolling. So we never really played it safe, being like, yeah, we're going to make sure we have half a year of salaries for these people ready. It was always kind of, okay, we took a big bite and then we tried to, okay, see how we deal with it.
Which is interesting because, and I know as myself, is like I want to project out into the future and say, oh, you know, being optimistic, it'll work out. But like you said, one, like you talked about in terms of really looking inside the business and saying, okay, well, what do we have to provide for the business? And then what do we have to provide for the employees that you hire, right? Because I think that's so important. So business growth and profitability kind of go hand in hand, and hiring the right team as well, which is important, and be able to provide for them. So it sounds like you were optimistic, which I think is beautiful. You partnered with the right person, because I think, you know, I was a solopreneur for a long time and it can be pretty lonely sometimes, but also good to bounce things off. So it's good to have that other partner, but then also scaling too fast, it could have been, right? Like you, in terms of hiring too fast and not being able to afford that. So what did you guys do in that moment that you had the aha moment?
Oof, yeah, so we took fast decisions. I mean, going back to the team point, I think we only got that far because we hired the right people in the beginning. Mm. And in terms of right people, there's always, you know, a wide range as to how you define the right people. But I think for us being a startup, bootstrapped at that point, still unexperienced in a lot of ways, the mindset was the main thing. You know, I mean, sure, we had some really good designers, project managers, but the mindset. So some of the people we put into our teams, they've never worked on such projects before, but just by meeting them, we could feel, wow, their interests are aligned. You know, they're not it's not just a little rich for them to do something else. They seemed quite passionate about it. And I think the first, say, 10, 15 people we hired, they made MBJ to a big extent to what it is now. You know, they just, A, gave a lot of input. They gave Tony and me a lot of energy and motivation to do what we did. I think they've built MBJ. So that was a big part. And then also in turn, we grew. And at some point we had a team of 70 people between Berlin and London. We grew very fast. I would say inconsiderately fast. At some point, you know, we made very big projections. We said, in order to meet these projections, we need to hire people. We need to have salespeople. We need to have project managers, a support team. So we hired. And at that point, I think we lost a little bit track of the overall output of just making sure that, okay, you know, whatever we spend has to come back in at some point. I mean, after all, it's a business. And that was tough. That was a tough decision. And I think that's where I personally failed to some extent, because I was too optimistic and I was like, yeah, we're gonna be able to manage, you know, I didn't want to let anyone go yet. So Tony and I, we had this talk and we saw, I mean, this is quite personal now, but I'm happy to share it now because it's several years ago, but I think I haven't really talked to many people about this. We saw and we said, okay, our cash flow, and Tony and I, we both had studied finance, so we knew the numbers and we were not oblivious about those. We knew, okay, we have another 3 months of payroll that we can cover and office. And with what's coming in right now in projects, that's not going to change that much, because we have a subscription model, which long term is great, but there's no huge amounts coming in. It's trickling in over time, which is great. And after a while, the margins get bigger because a lot of the work has been done, but we did a lot of work up front. And I think I was too optimistic and I was so attached to the team that I was like, we can't let anyone go yet. You know, we're going to turn it around. So we started talking to investors, we started talking to banks, and then we all of a sudden it looked like, hey, we have a bunch of good options. We had two banks willing to give us loans, and which at this point now I'm very happy didn't happen in the end, because we would have put the company in a lot of debt, heavy debt. And also investors seemed interested, and then we kept pushing it and we said, okay, it's going to be fine. And then all of a sudden, everything, I think within 1 week, defaulted. So there was the shattering moment. You know, at that point, I worked probably 18 hours a day for MBJ. That's all I did. Wow. We were too obsessed with it. That's another thing we can maybe talk about later.
Yeah.
And just in one go, everything started to crumble. So the investor said, oh, we're going to need half more year. You know, things are a little bit unstable right now. We need to wait. And then the second investor said the same. And then the bank said, well, we can provide you a loan, but you can only use it in Germany, which didn't make any sense for us. And then all of a sudden it crumbled. And I remember I was at a conference. I was speaking in front of probably 600-700 people, giving a presentation about our business, about us moving our business from London to Berlin. And just before I gave the talk, Tony called me and said, the bank just called. They're not giving us the loan. And I was like, oh my God, that's it. And then I had to still go up on stage. It'd be all exciting. That was like a, you know, it felt like a weird dream.
Yeah, definitely.
So eventually we said, okay, we need to let people go. Mm-hmm. Can you still see me fine, or is the sun too much in my face?
I can see you. Yeah, I can see you, yeah. Please tell me.
Yeah, so we had to make the decision to let a part of the team go, which we did. So we did let, I think, 5-6 people go, and then we realized, okay, we're going to cover another 2 or 3 months, and we don't want to start cutting people off weekly now, because it's going to make everyone feel unsafe, and it's also having a huge fall on us.
Yeah.
So we said, we just need to make one huge cut. And then one day I remember I woke up and we came into the office and we said, today we're going to fire 35 people.
Wow.
And that was nightmarish, you know. Yeah. Not on the one side, we felt responsible for them, but they've built MBJ to what it was. They've trusted us. And I felt like as leaders, we had failed, you know.
Yeah,
big time. So that was devastating. And I remember after the day, I was head back to back, just sitting down with people, getting them into the room, telling them, look, this is the last couple of weeks you're working with us.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I was just empty. I had no emotions left in my body. I wasn't happy. I wasn't sad. I just felt like a shell. I remember I was sitting down with my sister, who at the time worked for us as well. And she understood because I had kind of told her. And yeah, I remember that was probably the lowest point so far that I can remember.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I'm feeling it over here myself too. I mean, having been in organizations where that happens and being someone who cares about the humans, because you speak very vulnerably about that situation, which is one, you're very intentional about how you hire, right? It's like, skills aside, you hire people who are your same culture, are your passionate inside and have a desire to whatever they do it with passion, and they do it with, you know, they're all in, right? And that's a testament to you and your co-founder as well. It's that there's that similar culture. And in turn, like you said, you held on probably too long, because also you wanted to provide for them, which is so honorable, by the way, because I'd say a lot of leadership wonders, like, do I hold on? Don't I hold on? And a lot of leaders have the choice of whether, I call them either we leaders, where they're for the collective whole, or they're just for myself. And you definitely are a we leader. And like you said, you learned something in that process, which was, you know, really, really coming to terms with yourself and saying, and you and your partner saying, okay, what's the best for the business, even if it's not going to be the greatest for the whole, because, you know, as a founder, you don't want to let anyone go. You don't, you want them. Like you said, they built the organization. I feel that over here, you know, it's, you feel this sense of responsibility, but it's also a matter of what I think that you did brilliantly. And really anyone that's watching, take note of this, is that yes, there was that time where you scaled quickly and you held on potentially too long. But what you did do is you once again gave your all in, and you sat down with everyone and was very intentional about who you let go, and you sat down with all of them. And at the end, you were depleted. But what I'm hearing as well is that, like, you know, you owed them that. They invested their life in you and the company. And as a leader, I think leaders owe their people that, really owe them their respect. And I honor you for doing that, because it would be too easy to be like, okay, sorry, we're done, and then go. But you really gave them each individual, you gave them the notice, but I can guarantee you, you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, but I can guarantee you also told them how amazing they are and their impact and all that, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we told them, and I think they kind of felt it as well, because I think some of them, I mean, funny enough, most of them are still close friends of ours. Some of them are still very close friends. Some of them are even closer friends than before, which is amazing. Made us learn a lot about people. But I think some of them, when we spoke to them after, they said they could see how shattering it was for Tony and myself. You know, like, because in our heads, we were going to take this team very far. I mean, this is now, you know, as I said, 3 years ago, and we had different visions, but in our head it was just going so fast, and we just saw this line projecting, and we saw us with this team very far down the line. And then just, you know, having to let them go, that was pretty tough. But at some point, and then I think there was an emergency switch where we said, okay, no one's going to take the decision for us. We're just going to run it completely against the wall if we don't do this now. Some took it quite well, others, I think, you know, less, but everyone knew why we did what we did. I think some wondered why we didn't do it sooner. You know, I think some of them were like, oh, you maybe should have done this earlier, and we should have.
You're like, they were right. True.
they were definitely right. Yeah. But then, yeah, we were juggling a lot of different things at the same time, and I think we just got blinded by that fast growth that we said, you know, we that's a dangerous thing. If you come over a lot of obstacles, small ones, and they get bigger and bigger, you start really becoming a risk taker. And eventually you feel, you're like, yeah, it's going to be fine. You know, we managed all these things, because there were so many times when we literally just managed to get the funds in on the same day as payroll was due. You know, so many times we're like, oh my God, we're just going to each project.
Yeah.
So we did take risk. I mean, we always had a small plan B in our pockets, but we were like, we're going to be fine. And at that point we were not going to be fine. Looking back now, I think it was a good thing for the company. I think everyone I'm still in touch with, they're doing great stuff. I think MBJ in one way or the other helped them to, you know, learn about team spirit. We were such a strong team. We could really rely on each other. And as I said, some of us are still very, very close friends.
Yeah. Well, I think what I'm hearing too is the intake of people, the intake of who works for your company is so important to be intentional. Again, like you were saying, skills aside, who are these people? And then when they leave, because nowadays no one stays at one company forever. That's just the way that it goes, right? And you and Tony as leaders, even though, maybe you should have, could have, would have done it earlier, right? But you didn't, but you still owned up to it. You still owned what you did, what you didn't do. And when I was talking about creating this, the profitable leader, is I think about, a lot of people think about money, but you said something that I think is really key. And if anyone's, you know, listening and they're growing their business, or they have a desire to grow a business or whatever it might be, one, listen to what he said in terms of how he grew it. And then also what he did in the moment of letting people go, because you said, and a lot of those people right now are still close to you. And that's a testament to who you are, not only as a human, but as a leader, because I would say, and you can tell me, like, who do you think that you were in that moment? I mean, you were authentic, you were vulnerable, you were clear, you know, in terms of who you were to them, which I think people really honor and respect. And that's why they're still in your life. So you don't have to be a leader that just chops people, you know, you're clear and transparent.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And also owning up to the mistakes you do, you know, because after all, Tony and I sharing positions of CEO and CTO, and we took the decisions. We eventually, we did have a pretty vertical decision-making hierarchy, which is another point that we probably could have done better, but just because we grew fast, and in the beginning it was just him and myself in our little living room. Yeah. We grew fast, so we were quite still used, and we were young, and we had put everything we had into this. So we were used to still being micromanaging on many levels. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't, let's say, mature enough or confident enough to delegate enough. We delegated, but even smallest decisions we still took. And I think at this point, we had to say that it came to this. Sure, some people were maybe not pulling their weight, but we, in the end, we took the decisions to put them in the, you know, into the, we gave them the certain responsibilities. So certain things went into a way, but it was all down to us.
Yeah.
It wasn't because the sales team didn't perform or because projects took longer. It was us setting the metrics and not keeping up with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, so in the end, it was really us. We didn't really have a C-level team where we said, okay, it's shared responsibility, because we micromanaged a lot. Again, it's something retro, like now looking back, we micromanaged a lot. And at the time, it didn't even seem like this, because we were just so, you know, obsessed with it. But now looking back, crazy. If I was to do it again, that would probably be the first thing. Trust people a bit more, let go, and actually let people have more responsibility and more say in it, with the risk of it potentially going wrong.
Yeah.
But I think, the micromanagement was a big part. It was just because there was very little room for error. You know, as soon as we lose one project, it could mean a huge thing. So if you're moving that close to the line, there's not that much room for error. So I compared this with some of the startups that some of my friends worked in from uni or high school. They worked in, you know, some startups that just raised 20 mil, 50 mil. And there's more room for error. So if this campaign doesn't work that well, okay. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying they have endless opportunities, but there's more room. For us, it was like, if we lose this project, it's going to get tight.
And right.
Yeah, so this led to a bunch of decisions, but I think everyone learned quite a lot from it.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, because you had fast growth. How do you think, and I wanted to get back to the, I wanted to ask this one question first though, but I wanted to get back to the fact of delegating, right? I get it, because even myself, I think, oh my God, I don't want to give that away, because I know how to do it and I hope they know how to do it. And we have small margin of error, and one project out the door could mean not necessarily complete make it or break it, but it could. And so I think as you're growing as a leader and growing as a business, it is really key to look at who you hire and what you give them, not just for the business, but even for them, right? Because they're saying, you hired me for what? But can you speak to one before we get to that part, which I think is a brilliant aspect for people to learn from you, is on that. But in terms of how did you grow so fast? Like, what was that secret sauce of how you grew so quickly?
We look back at I think big part, as previously mentioned, the team making things happen, you know, working a lot. I think there were sometimes weeks in which we achieved as much as I would compare to other teams in a whole month, just because we worked a lot. Sometimes a little bit too much, I'd say. You know, sometimes we didn't take those breaks that we should have maybe taken to rest a little bit. But I think it was getting everyone so excited about it, the team sharing that vision, which in the first, you know, in the beginning wasn't that easy, but at some point they saw, okay, that's not just what we're doing. There's a much bigger picture behind it.
Yeah.
And I think once this motivation came, everyone in the team also took this to their personal life. So I kind of compared it to some of my friends working corporate. So they have their job and then they have their personal life. But I think with MBJ, it just merged to a level which was so much fun, and I would never miss the time, but to a level where I think it might've been unhealthy. You know, we went partying together. We were working together. We spent weekends together. We were together so much, especially, let's say, we called it the core team. So the core 5-6, who really the first 6 hires. And I mean, all of us living in London, fairly close to each other, we just did everything together, which was great, but we wouldn't stop talking. We literally had to introduce a rule when we would go out partying. We cannot talk about MBJ, because at some point at the night, the conversations would always go there again. And so I think it was just a big part of obsession that Tony and I were able to transfer to the rest of the team. And then I would also say quite a lot of luck. And of course, a lot of our clients, knowing that we're a young team, I mean, at the time I was 20, 23, 24, and Tony's 2 years younger than me. So we, very young team, you know, some of our clients in their 40s, 50s. But they saw that we were so obsessed with it. And they saw that it's not just Tony and me. They saw that every person in our team, whether it's project manager or business development or even just the office manager, that they're all so behind it and that they love it so much. And so we pretty fast had a big following of people. So we would have these quarterly office parties with like big eye statues, you know, and so many people would come. So it would usually be the MBJ team plus friends and family and then clients. So we also, even with the clients, we got quite close. And I mean, a lot of the clients are still our clients now, 3-4 years later, you know, they still are our clients. Creating this community. So it wasn't just a company that built their website and provided online services, digital services. It was more like they loved the MBJ team. And there was a key moment when I heard some friend of mine in London tell me, oh yeah, someone talked about you guys. You know, they said MBJ, they have this really cool team. And someone else even being like, yeah, my friend, he went to this office party, you know, not even making this direct connection to us. So that's when I saw, okay, now it's accelerating, because it's not just Tony and me and our circle of friends, it's everyone in the team and their friends and family and even them talking about. So that's how we accelerated in terms of projects, but also just motivation and output.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's one thing to think about too, is your clients then are some of your clients now as well. And what they identified was the unification of the company, right? Yeah. Because they can also, which is, I see it happen over again, especially with startups, whether they be age young or just business young, that there could be the founders and then they'll hire their people and then there's a disconnect. Even though, like you said, you might have done a little too much together, which, you know, if you're going to lean one way, I would say do more together than not. And I get that about, I have to go out and not speak about my business too, or my employees. And we say, we have to shut off. There has to be that balance, because if not, you'll also burn yourself out. But I think, you know, and that's really easy. Burnout is a thing, especially for a young hustler, startups and entrepreneurs, you know?
It is. And it takes a lot longer to come back from it than to get into it. You know, all of a sudden you're in it and you just feel exhausted and you don't want to pick up phone calls anymore. And then I would say we were at no point of burnout, but we were very exhausted. I think for me, burnout is a strong term. And I think I've been fine mentally, but there were times when I had heavy insomnia. You know, when people called me on the phone, I wouldn't pick up unless I could see the number and it was either Tony or my family or very close friends. But it took a lot longer to recover from it than to get into it.
Yeah.
A lot longer. That's something to keep in mind. That's why now I'm telling some friends who I see working like crazy and sacrificing their health to some extent, where I tell them, watch out. It took us half a year to get into this mindset where we just felt exhausted all the time. And it took me a good 1 or 2 years to sort of come out of it and feel this energy coming back again.
Yeah, exactly. And I've been there as well myself. I had people in my life saying, it's going to happen. Watch out. And I just was going, and so passionate about my vision, and other people were passionate about the vision. And then there was that point of, I wasn't picking up the phone either. Same thing for only certain people, because I couldn't give them my all, and I just couldn't do it. And so I think that's a great aspect is, you know, as a leader that comes from that space. And if someone's watching and you're like, I think I'm a leader, you are. I mean, everyone is in their own way. Just believe in yourself and do whatever you're passionate about. If you're going towards it as a leader, really like learn from, and that's why I talked about with the profitable leaders, bringing people who have been there and done that to share these kinds of stories so that you don't have to go through as much as we did. You're going to go through your own. You're going to go through your ups and downs. But to be able to learn and say, all right, that's one learning, and to check myself, right, is, wow, I feel like I'm not wanting to pick up that phone. Huh, Julian said that. Should I be thinking about balancing my life? You know, or wow, the person that I'm working with is seeming really tired. Check in with them, right, is having the good of self and the good of whole in mind, because you want to keep going, but you only have so much. You really only have so much to give. So,
you know. Yeah, that's so true. And it's, as I earlier talked about, the advantages of having a business partner, you know, being able to balance out, but it can also go that way where you just push each other.
Yeah.
To a level where it's not healthy, where it's one of us loves to work early. Like I love early mornings, you know, so we would come in before the team would come in at 8 or 9, we would be there by 6, and he loved to work late. So we would be together, and that would eventually, I think, yeah, it was at some point just too much. And this could easily go into that direction as well.
I think pretty typical. I mean, I think it's pretty typical, especially our founders and startups and even serial founders and people that do it over and over, but you get so passionate about it, which is so great. And something that I think that you mentioned as well is really, you know, how you brought people on very intentionally, and then also ensuring that they're well taken care of, right? Is you can build your culture of people, and you build it, and you and I identify in a lot of ways about it, because skills aside, you need to hire your people who are aligned with the same passion, with the same, whatever your personal culture is. You and Tony had a personal culture and a brand culture, and you hired people into that. And there's a potential for their, I guess you could say, burnout or their exhaustion as well, right? Because when you're all on the same boat and everyone believes in everyone, you just keep going, and there could be burnout, which then could, it impacts humans, but it also impacts your customers, et cetera, and then you can't provide. So to be able to balance that, I think, is a great point.
Super important, yeah. Especially when you're young, you don't really know your limits yet to that extent. You know, you feel like you have so much energy. And I mean, I'm still young, you know, just about to turn 32, but I could definitely feel the energy decrease over the last 8 years to some extent.
Yeah.
Compared to when we started.
Yeah, I identify with that as well. I mean, I still work to the point of having to acknowledge, you know, are you going to burn out or not? Because I get really excited, you know, about things, and other people get excited. So it's fun to do that. But on the path of profitability, and people look at it like as money. And a lot of people that go out there and they say, oh, I have a product, or I want to make a lot of money. And that's beautiful, both. But really, at the end of the day, we're living our own lives and accountable for the lives around us as well. So I think one of the things, I don't know if you can speak to this, because you've said numerous things that lead to this, is you have people that even you've let go that are still in your life, that still respect you, care about you, and believe in you. You have clients that are still around as well. So you can be a serial founder, for instance, but if no one's following you, you're not being a leader. You're just being another serial founder, right? So, and you do so many different things. You're an advisor for different organizations. You know, you do a lot of different aspects. And if you weren't the transparent, authentic, we culture type of leader, it'd be very hard to do that over and over again, because you'd have to rebuild and do that, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's true. Yeah.
What would you know, with other people that are out there really wanting to, you know, grow their business, build their business, anything else you want to talk about in terms of, you know, any other learnings that you've had, that were your other aha moments? Cause there's so many when, you're living your life and you're trying to live your passion. Cause sometimes like we don't live our passion. We just go, okay, I'm supposed to be in that box. And you obviously, even though the people chattered at you, are you crazy? Like, you just got out of uni. And for those people who don't know, it's university. But you just got out of university. Are you crazy? You should be in that box. You should get a job. And you went for your passion. And it's still succeeding. And you've had a lot of learnings. But for those people who are doubting it or wondering about it, what advice would you give them?
I think it's sometimes good to not put all onto one, I don't know how you say it in English, put everything into one basket, right?
Egg in one basket, yeah.
Because it can, the pressure can be quite intense sometimes, you know. So I've seen friends build businesses whilst doing part-time work or while still having a job. Sure, it goes slower. It's pretty intense and it might not get your full attention, but there is less of a, let's say, this financial pressure on it, or less of this huge need that it has to go well. Because Tony and I, we had put ourselves into a position where we felt okay, we really need this has to work, you know. And so when it worked, it was great, because we didn't just prove it to ourselves but to everyone else, which especially at that age was great. And I don't even remember having any haters. So I don't remember, you know, a lot of people always say, oh, when you do well, you have haters. I don't remember that really. I feel like we had a very supportive network, like the people, or maybe we just detached from the people who weren't supportive. Maybe that's what happened.
There's that too.
You know, I think that's maybe what happened if I actually think about it closer, but maybe not, depending on your own situation. So everyone has a different situation. You know, some people have to pay back student loans. Their financial situations are very different. So only doing as much as you're actually comfortable with from the get-go, you know, not just quitting your job and being like, okay, I need to make money within the first 2 months, because then, well, it can go very, very wrong. But I think everyone has to sort of assess their own level of how much risk they're willing to take. And for us, fresh out of uni, we were willing to take a lot of risk. We were super excited about it. And I think now at this point, I'd be a little bit more cautious, but that's probably just maturing, right?
Yeah.
Sort of assessing it and then moving by it, because the main thing is not to be impacted by daily emotions, you know. So if you have good days, you wake up, you have a great day, it's sunny, you have a big coffee, you get a new project, and all of a sudden you want to put everything onto this thing. Next day, an angry client calls you, tells you how horrible your company is, and things go wrong, you know, your car breaks down and you have to pay a huge bill on fixing it. So don't be affected by these little daily things that happen, because they will always happen, a lot of them out of your control. I think it's more about setting a vision and saying, okay, you know, of course, a flexible vision that might adjust over time, but how do I get there without these daily interferences? Because they will happen.
Yeah.
And account for them. They will come. So
yeah,
I think that's the main thing, not being torn down and just emotional. I can tell you it's our emotions had a huge aspect, you know. Yeah. When you feel tired and weak and just everything's going south, you're likely to make bad decisions. You're likely to not make the best decisions in regards to a whole bunch of stuff. And also the way around, when you're super hyped up and everyone's pushing you, you know, you just had a big article on, I mean, even the German TV, like the number one German TV channel, did a small documentary on us, like 20, 30 minute one, which friends of mine saw, who I haven't talked to in years, and they hit me up. They're like, hey, we just saw you on TV. That's cool, you know?
Yeah.
My grandma said, I was listening to a podcast and all of a sudden they're interviewing you guys.
Oh, wow.
I had an 86-year-old grandma, which is very cool. You know, that's quite motivating. But you tend to make this, you should make decisions based on these little things. You should make decisions based on the big picture, not on these little things that come up. And even I experience it still today with what I do with MBJ and Alchemist. There's a great day, everything's going great. And then you get overly, you should use that energy to do something good. I'm not saying don't, you know, I definitely enjoy that moment, but don't make too many big decisions based on that one emotion that will fade eventually.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Mindset comes into my mind, right? Is mindset, you're thinking like the iceberg model, right? You've probably heard about that in terms of, you know, you can see the results up top and then the behaviors and your actions. And then, but what's really below those high highs and the low lows, and especially as a founder or just a leader that's passionate. I identify with that 100%, because there are those high highs and low lows. And I know it's my responsibility, because it's my mindset or my thinking coming in that is creating that. So, and to your point, it minimizes exhaustion and will minimize burnout if you understand, before you start, is just say there's going to be high highs and low lows, but it's my responsibility to ensure that they don't go so high and so low that I'm just this like ping pong and of emotion, because it will exhaust you, to your point. It will exhaust you down. And as we said earlier, it's never a straight line. I've never met anyone that, I've asked a lot of people, I said, so tell me about your straight line life. And everyone goes, what are you talking about? I've never had that. I've never met a human, right? So being that we know the truth that life is not a straight line, like you said, you know, being so passionate and going for your dream, it can bring you to those high highs and low lows, but you can take responsibility for that. And I think in terms of your, like you were talking about age and you slowed down a little bit, I think that's again, one reason why I wanted you on here, because I mean, right, again, right out of university, you hustled hard, you hustled quick, and you've come where you've come, and it's proven business growth. It's proven knowledge of what works, what doesn't work, and you're still learning that, right? So your nuggets of gold and what you have taken away from that journey of hustle, of passion, of growth, of all that is now helping you now. And I think a lot of people watching, I'm telling you, so many people start their companies or their careers or whatever it is, and they forget to look at people who have done it before them and learn from history, learn from people like Julian, learn from the others that are talking on this summit, how it can benefit you to not have to trip and fall so much or hit exhaustion or whatever it might be. And then learn other ways to, I mean, he has clients following him still, people that he let go that are still following him. So there's ways to minimize the negativity that could happen and then increase the positivity, which then will drive you to profitability a lot quicker, I think, definitely. So,
yeah.
Anything else about MBJ or anything else you think that would be good to mention or that you're proud about or, you know, because it's always, I think, good to speak about that.
Yeah, I think one part which is overlooked a lot of times and a lot of times also put into a very bad picture, in my opinion, nowadays and you know, with the whole millennial generation, but I think it's super important. I might sound super boring, but I will put a huge part of our success onto this as well, is just organization, just being organized. It sounds sometimes so ridiculous, and I sometimes cringe when I hear myself talk about it, but you know, you could have a great team, you could have a great vision, you could have a great product, customers, but if you don't manage to streamline stuff or to properly organize stuff, especially from let's say the leadership level, everyone will be confused. So I think a big part of the success was that Tony and I, we are both, I don't want to say OCD, even though people use OCD, but I think OCD is I don't want to use it in that context, but I think a lot of people understand OCD as just, you know, having things organized, clean, tidy in a certain manner. So I'm using it in that aspect. I'm not using it related to OCD, which is a pretty serious condition, which I was only made aware of a few weeks ago. I didn't know about this because you know, if someone likes to put their phone onto a certain part of the table line with whatever, you know, square, they call it OCD. And I used it as well in this way. So I just want to make sure that I don't mean it in this relation. But we were very particular about how we kept our to-do lists, our calendars, all this stuff, because we knew we're a very young team. And as soon as we show, or like as soon as we act like a young team, or as people would expect a young team to act, you know, maybe forgetting something, or then we've lost, because that's pretty not acceptable, especially, let's say, the industry we're in. You know, we take care of digital strategies and websites. There's not a lot of room for error. Things have to go according to a certain way. And I think organization is so important, whether it's to-do lists, and it helped also the team get a lot more productive. And even some of the creatives we had on the team, you know, the designers who didn't really like a structure or sorting their inbox, even they came back to us saying, wow, this has helped me so much. And it's not about just getting super organized. It's putting all the admin stuff that you might not enjoy that much, which comes if you're an entrepreneur, even if you have good lawyers, accountants, assistants, there is a big part of admin stuff. Put it into that aspect, and then you have a lot more time for creative work, you know, because otherwise it overlaps. So I remember the times when we lost a little bit track of this organization because we just got so busy with other stuff that it just overwhelmed us. At the end of each day, I had still 20 tasks left and they overlapped. And so in the end, it was just too much.
Yeah.
Those were the days when my creativity shut down. That's when I was just on this mode. I need to do this. I need to. And that was a big learning. So I would put back the growth of our business, also the stages which our company has come from, initially just building mobile apps, which is, you know, to now the product we have with website as a service and the, you know, the things we do, there was always a certain input of creativity. And I think if we hadn't put aside this time and this organization for the very essential stuff, it would have been a lot more difficult. So anyone, I encourage them, especially if you're talking about building a company, scaling, you know, I mean, everyone has different ambitions. Some would, you know, someone stay by themselves and work with some freelancers, and that's fine. Maybe you need a little bit less of that, but especially if you're planning on building a big team, a big company, this organizational aspect is so important. And if you start it off right, it's much easier. If you start in the beginning, it's so simple to also, you know, show your team that this is the way you work and for your team to be organized. And I think this is, as I mentioned earlier, when we had this big team all of a sudden, we kind of were less organized because there were just so many things we dealt with opening the company in Germany. And I think this was especially the point when we had to be organized, but it slipped a little bit. And so the overall output of the team dropped by probably 40% easily, you know, especially having teams collaborate in different locations. We had, as I said, a team in London and Berlin. We had some support teams in Asia, even in the US, and it got very inefficient.
Yeah.
And then if you translate this into the numbers, of course, anyone has to be obsessed with the numbers. If you run a business that should be profitable at some point, that's part of it, no matter how great the team is in the product. And that directly translates into the numbers. So I encourage everyone to have some sort of organization. And I'm sure, Elena, you have this as well, where you sometimes can't shut your brain off in the evening. You know, I'm sure you do. And it's something which drove me nuts at points where you just don't calm down. Your brain just keeps running. And these to-do lists helped me because I knew I did everything I had to do today.
Yeah.
That's it. Tomorrow is a new day. But if I didn't have this, there was always like, oh, I forgot something. I could still do this. And this also brings me back to my point about the emotions. Even on a bad day, if you wake up and you have your list, you know, the essential things you have to do, no matter what, you do them. You know, you don't let your emotions decide what you do. You do them, even if it's an uncomfortable email, an uncomfortable phone call, you do it. And by the end of the day, you feel better. And other way around, on the great days, you do these things, but maybe you do some on top. You work ahead.
Right.
And it's just this consistency that is all overlooked a lot of times. I see a lot of people, they want to have this very fast, big success. And I'm sure they do exist, you know, but I think the problem is a lot of media outlets only talk about these overnight success stories. And a lot of people who have never built a business, they're blinded by them. And they want, I have half a year, you know, to raise 50 mil for the startup, for this great idea. And this is how so many entrepreneurs fail. They set the aim so extremely high. So they fail very quick. And some of them try again and eventually they make it, which I think is great. Others, they're discouraged by it. I think this consistency helps, you know, being organized and doing what you have to do. It's not all just fun and creating new, innovative, cool products. There's a big part of it, of stuff that you just have to do, whether you want it or not.
Yeah. I know that, and it's not a dumb situation that you brought up, the organized situation. I'm a huge fan of process, organization, and systemization because, having worked in companies like LinkedIn and GoPro, I watched it go from chaos to organized. And the moment it switched, it was like everyone was optimized. Things were getting done like 10x, and people started to smile more because they had more time to do work and what they loved. And I think your point is 100% what I believe in, because I know that when I first started my business, it was less systematized and more just, okay, I have 105.2 things to do and I wouldn't shut my brain off. And I also, to your point, I wouldn't give myself enough credit for what I did that day. So I would go to bed thinking about all the things that I would have to do and I didn't do enough. And I wouldn't sit there and go, you know what, Elena, like, wow, look what you did today. Yeah. And I think that's a big thing for people who are driven and passionate to go, there's so much more, there's so much more, there's so much more. And there will always be for those that are driven.
Always be more.
You know, and I didn't do this in my 20s and I started to do this in my 30s, but now I'm more like, okay, good job. And I really look at my day. I'm like, what did you do today? Oh, maybe you didn't accomplish as much. All right, what can you shift? What can you change? But to your point exactly is organization is key. And for every part of the business, right? I say systemization for every part of the business is key. And I happen to focus on the hiring piece, which is systemizing that. But your point, I think, is so great, which is, like you even said, the admin work. Like, any of it needs to be organized, systematized, so that it's repeatable. Like you said, repeatable, people know what they're doing, they're clear, whether it be just the founders or even the people. Because if your people are going, well, I think I know what I'm doing per day and I don't really have my indication, and leadership's not being clear. Well, if leadership's not clear, the rest of the company's not clear. And if the leadership's not organized, the rest of the company's not going to be organized. And there's going to be a lot of frustration. And exactly 90%, and it's still to today, 90% of startups fail. And some get lucky out of the 10%. But I think a lot of them that do succeed in that 10% look to the past of other people and say, wow, what worked, what didn't work, and they get organized and systematized earlier. Yeah. I think you bring up great, it's a great point. I think it's one of the most overlooked parts, I think, of building a business is because you don't want to sit back and go, okay, I have to organize this. You don't want to do that. You just want to be creative and go. I get that, you know? But I know when I hit my wall of, wow, it's kind of getting out of control. I have so much things to do. And I was depleting in terms of my own creativity. Someone, I had a conversation with one of my mentors, and he said, how organized and systematized is your business? And I went, not as much as I'd like. He goes, exactly. So I took a week, and it felt like forever. But to your point, it went from here and kind of shaky to here, because I knew every day what was going on, and I could pivot easily, and I knew what was, and I could delegate what, and, you know, people that work for me were more clear. And if we didn't, we could pivot easily. So I think that's a perfect point to bring up. Perfect. So
I'm super happy that you resonate with it, because exactly as you said, it's so important for the team as well, you know, because I could feel in the last weeks before everything kind of, you know, went south, the situation I explained before, we were so overworked that I remember sometimes some of our team wanted something from us, and we just, you know, I noted it down on my phone. That's where I usually start with my lists, and then I put it into a list, but it never made it to the list because I was just so overworked. And then if they come back to you 2 days later and they're like, oh, did you manage to do this and that, you start feeling bad, and they don't feel, they maybe feel taken less serious, you know, because they feel this is important for what they do. And if the person who has to sign off on it or whatever doesn't do it, it makes it feel less important.
Yes.
So exactly as you say, I think it's such an important aspect. And as I said, for the creativity, admin can be a creativity killer. And, you know, if you set apart 2 hours at the first Monday of the month to talk to your accountants and you just scheduled it in, you know, it's not going to be a great Monday, but you do it and you can lead the rest of the week with it. And a lot of people just spend so much time deciding what they're going to do rather than doing it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, that was me during university, I made plans when I'm going to study what. I kept delaying them, and I just kept cramping more into, went from a 4-week plan to a 2-week plan with the same amount that I had to achieve.
Yeah.
And to the point where I barely, you know, barely made it. And so I think this was one of the lessons that you just have to do those daily things, and eventually it's going to be fine.
Yeah, exactly. You can't just always focus on the creative side or what you want to do. You got to do the things, because there's not one person out there that's good at everything. There's just not. And so there's going to be things you don't like to do. You've just got to do them. And that's part of business. So I get that too. Is sometimes, like they say on your dinner plate, you eat the things that you like the least first. And get that over with.
Truck, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I call that in business front loading, right? Is front load your week sometimes with a few things that you don't like to do. You know, if you don't like to run the numbers early. Like, just get into that place of uncomfortable. And because that's a part of the business, you know. So
that's exactly it. This is this is another part where, you know, if you have meetings. Sometimes I was dreading meetings. They would take a lot of time. You know, sometimes I would just squeeze all meetings into one day. And I knew, I think we talked about this already when we spoke on the phone, but it's, you know, you have a packed day, you wake up and, you know, I'm going to have 10 meetings today. But hey, you get up, you get into that mindset, you know, you drink a big coffee or double espresso, and then it's much easier to rock through rather than having them clustered throughout the week. because they will always interfere with what you're doing. So sometimes it's great to just have 2 days of nothing, just block out your own calendar, especially as a leader.
Yes.
That's something Tony and I didn't do. We should have sometimes just blocked 2 days for us to work together and work on stuff. And especially as the team grew, you know, we were always the go-to point for new ideas, this. And we had a very open door policy. I mean, we had an open space office. Okay. Yeah. So sure, anyone could come us to at any point. And I think this, it's important as a leader to also draw some boundaries. Open door is important, but know when to get feedback and talk and when to do your own stuff. Otherwise you just deplete yourself by just being an enabler, you know, within an organization. You still have to focus on your own vision. And I think a good trick is to just block out 2 or 3 days in a week, half day or 2 full days, and just do your own stuff. And that will help you be more receptive to what the team wants to tell you. Because towards the end in 2017, I could feel I wasn't open to new suggestions anymore because I was so stressed, and I felt like everyone wanted something, some new ideas, some, you know, and when you're not receptive to this because you have so much on your plate, it's not great for anyone. It's not great for me. It's not great for the person talking to me.
Right.
So it's important to have your own time to properly then be there as, you know, as the role you want to be.
Yeah, I think that's, and the word trust came into my mind too, is that if you're, and it doesn't matter if it's a 1 week contractor that you've hired or a full-time employee, whoever works for you is working for your dream, right? And if they don't feel supported or you have the answers or the energy or the time, they're going to lose trust. And therefore they're going to lose trust in having a passion to work for you, as well as they're going to lack passion for what they're actually doing, because your interest in yourself, as you know, being balanced, can't deliver to them what they need to be balanced in their world and have a good life themselves. So I think that's a great point. That's a really, really great point. One thing that I wanted to bring up, and quickly talk about, I think, I remember reading online before I met you, was that, you and Tony, got really clear with yourselves about something big, about a rebranding, right? And which I think is, and again, you can speak to that, but I honored when I read that article, because I think a lot of us get so tunnel focused that we say, okay, no, you know, I want it this way and this is the way it is and that's the way it's going to be. And I get that. Sometimes I'm like, no, this is the way. And when I read that article, it was a very vulnerable share on your end of, this is just what we saw. And I'd love for you to share that in a tidbit if you're open to that. Because as anyone who has a company or looking to do that, a rebrand doesn't have to mean a negative thing. And actually, you have to be a certain kind of leader to do that. And what I read in that article was that you and Tony exuded the kind of leadership that will be long-term success, not a short-term, you know, success. Can you share that for a moment? Would you mind?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. So I think when we started off, we didn't think that much about the culture. We just, you know, got the logo, the company name, and we started because we kind of had to. We didn't have too much time to properly think about all these design thinking processes and stuff. You know, we just, and it, by the way, we didn't really know much about it. So we just did the bare minimum that we knew from business school and we started. And eventually we saw that when the team and the client base was growing, that our brand and just the way we presented ourselves just didn't match the spirit and the passion of the team and also our clients. So starting from our profile pictures on the website, being in suits and ties, you know, things like this, very corporate. Like one of my friends, she's deadly honest, but she came to me, she's like, what is this? You know, like, what is this? You guys are 22, 23, you're wearing suits and ties. Oh God, looking back, I just think.
I love that. I love that.
like normally the photos you would have in, like, you know, some law firm, the partners. The, you know, us like rosy cheeks, still being quite young. It was fun. And that's where it started, and it pulled through the wording, and, you know, we didn't have a clear way of communicating. I would say we were quite loud, and loud as in marketing, you know, kind of being like, yeah, you know, we're this brand, that's what we do. And I feel that, some part of that culture matched with the team in terms of growth and ambition, but I feel a big part was, it was just a mismatch. You would look at the the branding, the company, the website, and then at us, and you're like, well, that doesn't fit. So that's when we decided to rebrand. And I think a lot of people understand under rebranding, just, you know, changing the logo and stuff, but it was obviously just a whole company, just the way we present ourselves. And that's when we went onto the path of saying, okay, actually we want to present more of what, who our clients are, you know? So starting from just presenting some of our clients and not always being all about us, but saying this is our client and we enable them to do this and that, you know? And I think this worked quite well. And also with the team, we could feel that shift, that they were able to identify with it a lot more. It could have, you know, if you compare it to anyone who has been to business school or did their master's in some sort of business field, you at some point had a marketing project where probably you did exactly what we did. So it was nothing extraordinary. It was more about trying to get that input from the team, from the client, streamline and really ask and say, what's so different about us? And it was funny to how different some people saw us to the way Tony and I saw it. In no bad or good way, but it was different. Yeah. And it was kind of nice to get it onto the same page, especially for Tony and me, to understand why the team valued this company so much and why the clients value us so much. You know, most clients, that the first thing they said why we work with MBJ is, you guys have such a cool team. That's where it started. So it wasn't about us being professional and all this. Wow. Sure, there's probably things. And we were like, yeah, we should maybe, you know, use this more to our advantage. And also asking the team, why do you enjoy working with us? And we heard some bad things and we had some really good things. And we said, okay, let's focus on the good things and maybe try to get rid of some of the bad things. And
yeah,
in the beginning, it's always quite challenging, just the change management. You know, it's a process that you won't see in your books right away. It's a process that costs money, that causes disruption. And you won't right away see a benefit from it. Not immediately. It's a benefit that you only see after some time, but it was very necessary. And funny that we're speaking about it right now. I just had a call with Tony earlier. We're doing a slight rebranding right now because we feel the last 2 or 3 years again changed us. Of course, we have a smaller team now. We do different things and we kind of want to represent this, not just on our website, but generally the way we communicate.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important, but it has to be done at the right time. I think that's the only lesson I can give, which is very important. So it has to be at a time where you do have a bit of that mind space to do it. It shouldn't be at your busiest time. Like a lot of startups I see, they want to rebrand just before they go for a fund, a round of funding. And this is usually where you're already dealing with so many different things, you know. I mean, having worked for LinkedIn and GoPro, we've seen it on a whole different scale, but even on our scale, there were so many things we were dealing with. So it has to be done at a smart point when you maybe have a little bit of breathing room, because it will take a lot of involvement from the team and clients. You need to ask people, you need to talk to them and just get everyone and everything onto the same page.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I love that story and I loved hearing more of that story right now, because I think it's really important to, one thing that I was faced with about a year ago as well is really looking at, okay, well, how am I serving my customers, but not from my viewpoint, because someone said, okay, you have your own thought, but what are they saying? And I went, well, I think I know what they're saying. And they said, well, you can think or you can know. And so, and I think that's brilliant. Like you said, and then also with the people that work for you. And I can say this 100% working in talent acquisition and HR for so many years and humans in general, we assume so many things, right? Mm-hmm. And like you said, you learn great things and you learn some bad things, but the best part is that they were all on the table. And so if you put it on the table, if you as leaders said, oh no, we assume, or I'm sure they're fine with it, or I'm, you know, it's probably some bad things, and you work on top of assumption, you're definitely more likely for your company to fail and to close if you work on top of assumption. So as leaders, I think that was really big of you guys, is to say, wow, okay, you know, what are they saying? And you learn some magical things. You know, you learn, whoa, they looked at our team and that was their number one thing. Yeah. And it probably went, whoa, yeah, our team is amazing. And like you said, how do you use that to your advantage? Because really, as a founder myself, I want to serve so bad with what I have. I've just been given this capability, but I have to hear it from who I'm serving, because that's who I'm serving. And I think a lot of times with leadership and entrepreneurs and founders and whatnot, we know our own vision, we get it, but it's who we're serving, whether it be our clients or our employees or whoever works for us. It's important that we hear their voice and we create the journey, and we ensure that we take them into account. I mean, I think I've seen the companies, a lot of them that have failed, that have stayed with me, even though they want to serve, and it just doesn't work.
That's a very good point. That's quite true. And even strength could be turned into weaknesses, could be turned into strength, you know, like, because Tony and I were always quite aware of being a young team. I mean, the average age was probably, if you take out the lawyers and accountants, at probably 23, 24. initially, and that was always, we were quite conscious about it, because we knew that some of our competing agencies, you know, very experienced teams, and that was always one of the things where we were like, you know, these big clients are coming into the office now, what are they going to think, because we're all quite young. But I then realizing they love it, they love that we're so young and we have so much energy for it. That's something you might see less in agencies, you know, where people have worked for 10 years and they're kind of just doing the daily routine. I'm not saying all agencies, but I have seen agencies where it's more of like a rolling ball. It's not like this little jumpy thing where you can get ideas out of.
Yeah, I see you guys like the pogo sticks. Like, it sucks. You know, they're like, oh, do we want the pogo stick company, or do we want the, you know, they like their box? Oh my God. That's a great, no, and it's true. It's wherever you are in your journey. Don't assume even for yourself that what you have is not what someone wants, right? Because, and everyone, I see this in the world in general, like every human is so unique, they're great. So don't hide from your greatness. Like, don't hide from being a pogo stick company, like, you know, with all your energy. And just because you're young doesn't mean that you can't.
With your experience. Yeah.
The age does not mean anything, but age can offer, or time can offer. It doesn't guarantee it. People say, oh, age comes with wisdom. Not true. I think that age and time offers you the ability to learn, right? And offers you the ability to grow, but it's not guaranteed if you don't take it, right? Because knowledge, people say knowledge is power. I'm like, no, action is power. And having the knowledge at hand is super cool. But if you don't do anything with your knowledge, it doesn't do anything. So, but yeah, to your point, you know, I heard also in that just the message of don't think you're not meant for a company or clients, or don't try to be someone that you're not. Be who you are, because who you are is perfectly perfect and unique. And learn from the past, learn from what's going on, own who you are, and listen to others. You know, I think that's a big one. Amazing. Any before you get to your generous offer, anything else you want to leave them with? Any other words of wisdom? Because you always have so many. Whenever we talk, I'm in my head, I'm like mentally writing down all these things. And actually, since the first time that we spoke, I swear I've actually shared some of my learnings from you, from our conversations, and it's had me, even in just one conversation, think of my business, think of my personal life different, which I think is really, really big.
I'm really happy to hear this. And also after our last conversation, I realized that a lot of things, even though I kind of knew them in the back of my head, talking to you about them made them way more apparent. You know, sometimes it's all a blur until you kind of, again, structure it and bring it out and actually talk about it.
Yeah.
It becomes a lot more obvious stuff that you might, you know, Tony and me, we might not talk about it because it seems so obvious.
Yeah.
But when you actually talk about it, it's like, wow, I came to a lot of conclusions as well. I think the only thing that you touched on earlier about, you know, giving yourself a pat on the back, it's something which is important, because I'm not saying resting on your success, but I say just enjoying that whole journey, because, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're very motivated, driven, time will go by very fast, and you will spend so much time always just focusing on the next step, whether it's next week, next month, or for us, even we had a 3 and 5 year plan. And I think this sometimes took a lot of the magic out of that moment. I mean, looking back, I sometimes just wish that we had enjoyed it more because, don't get me wrong, we enjoyed it. We did have a lot of fun. But now looking back, sometimes we should have maybe stressed ourselves out a little bit less with, oh, this is what we're going to do now. And that's the next step. That's the next move, next plan. Because, I mean, no matter what age you are, it's a pretty special phase. And also, Tony and I, we look back a lot and we say, wow, you know, even though it didn't work out with the team the way we wanted it to be, we wanted this team to be with us till the end, if there's ever an end. But just enjoying that a little bit more and just taking a moment to breathe. And I even see it now in some of the startups that I'm involved in now, you know, like The Alchemist. You do it. You just plan and you don't enjoy what you've done now and the moment you're in. And even those late nights you spend with a team in the office working on a project that might not be most fun, but it's very special moments because you're only going to be doing it for that long.
Yeah.
You're not going to be doing this forever. And just for everyone to sometimes breathe a little bit and enjoy the moment. I mean, again, coming back to generation millennials, we're just always so focused on what's next and never in the moment. For me back then, surfing helped me a lot. Funnily enough, I really got into surfing because I felt that was the only place where I was in the moment because you're there. You know, you have to wait for the wave. You don't think about anything else. You're just there in a moment. And so after those 2 hours of surfing, I just felt so refreshed besides the physical workout, but just in your mind, because you're actually there for 2 hours. You're not in the past lingering on mistakes or stuff or being, you know, missing certain things or in the future, just planning stuff. You're right there. And I think if you manage to translate even a part of this, which I'm working on right now these days, into my daily life, it helps. And I feel the days where I'm present, it's so much better than the days where I'm just dwelling on past things or you know, working out stuff that's going to come.
Yeah.
And a good part to keep track of this. So in 2015 or 2016, I started doing a video diary just for myself. So it with no intention to share it with anyone, but I think eventually I will. So I think up until now, I've probably accumulated around 50, 60 videos. So I didn't have a schedule. Sorry.
Beautiful. I love that. I'm going to take that idea. I like that because I write things down, but I think seeing yourself is powerful.
It's insane. It's so powerful. I started and I just wanted to do it throughout the fundraising process. Mm. I feel like a lot of people could learn from it, you know, because a lot of my friends were like, oh, you know, how did this work? And I was like, I'm going to record it. And I kept doing it, but no clear structure because sometimes you just don't have something to say. You know, it's just whenever I feel urged and I'm like, okay, I'm going to do one tonight. And most of the time, the 2 or 3 minutes, you know, I don't try to stick to a time. Sometimes it's more personal stuff. Sometimes it's more business stuff. But it's amazing when you look back. So I recently just organized some of the photos on my laptop and I came across one of the first ones. And just the way your vision and your, you know, your beliefs change to some extent. It's amazing. So I would encourage anyone to do it. Like, I think some people like to write it down. I think a video is great because if you put them all together at some point, you know, it could be very interesting for some people to watch it. And most of all for yourself.
Yeah. No, and I think that's brilliant too is to enjoy the journey. And like you said, and if you record it, you know, watch your journey and look back to those moments that you're like, wow, I had a great day or wow, I had a crap day. Cause that's just the way that it goes. I think that's a great, that's a great tool to put in your pocket, you know, whether you're, you know, doing a business or not, whatever in life, I think that's a great idea. And I love that. I love that video aspect too. So. Amazing.
Yeah, I think people will be grateful. Back then I always said my future self will thank me, and I'm insane. You know, you can even see the face in 2017. Like my face looks like bloated. I look pale and exhausted. You know, I got like circles under my eyes, my hair, and I just look and I'm like, man, I look like 5 years older. And then you could see eventually things getting better, and it's funny. It's quite cool, and some stuff you just forget because you're so in the heat of it.
Yeah.
Get certain emotions, so it's kind of cool to put them out there, and it always puts your mind, it also helps to put your mind at ease and to rest because it's out there, you know, whether it's on a piece of paper or in a video.
Yeah, exactly. Intentionality, the word intentionality comes up, right? Because it I know myself, and I think you're the same, is being so passionate and being such a driven human, it'll never stop. If you let it go, it won't ever stop. And it's beautiful and it's amazing. Yeah. But having that leadership drive inside, you just always want to do something, create something, whatever. And I intentionally have to make myself stop. And I've done the surfing thing as well in Costa Rica. And I remember going, wow, I have to just be here, right now. And I'm at the mercy of a wave, whether or not it's the wave. And I can't even create the wave. So I'm at the mercy of whatever that looks like. And, you know, so I think that's beautiful. And I think that's a brilliant point to transition into your amazing share in terms of what you're offering, because this is time that you're offering, which is, I think, good for people to take advantage of. And everyone that's watching has this opportunity, what he's going to offer. So, will you share that in terms of what you're offering to this group, which I think is really generous? And I'll tell you, our conversations are usually never short, but even if it was 2 minutes, I would learn something, or I would grow or something. So any time with you, whatever time with you is just amazing. So this is a generous offer.
Thank you. Yes. So basically anyone who's interested, of course, there's a limited number, just because I do have a limited amount of time, but I'm going to see then, let's say 20, 30, 40 sessions, something like this, depending on how I spread them out. Happy to have a half an hour chat about whether it's something business related, you know, whether it's, I do know a lot about website, as you heard by now, and digital strategy. So if you want to know something about this, I'm happy to give you my honest input and advice, whether it's anything ranging from SEO via pay-per-click to influencer marketing or just some new ideas. I'm happy to give you my feedback. I've been working with quite a bunch of startups, some very successful startups, giving you my honest feedback. So you can definitely expect very honest feedback, which I think sometimes is a little bit rare in today's society. And secondly, also just talking about ideas, or if you heard something now in the last, I think 60s by now, that you found interesting. Happy to have a chat. I love meeting new, interesting people, and I'm happy to share or listen to your story. So Alina will share the link. So there will be a link where you can right away go on, and so you don't have to email me and stuff. You can right away see which times and dates are available. Please keep in mind, depending where you are, that I'm based right now in Berlin and Germany. So this will reflect on the calendar. Because we both are, for you, it's morning right now, right?
Yes, it is.
So that's the time zone thing. But anyone who's interested, I'd love to connect.
Brilliant. Amazing. So thank you for that. I appreciate it. And we'll say, as Julian said, let's say the first 20 were watching this message, because again, all of the guests here are offering their time, whatever it is that they're offering, it's their time, right? And they have big, huge lives. And I'm even grateful. I'm so grateful that they're offering this time to me, but to you, and out there, we can't see you and we don't know exactly who you are, but we're in service of you. And Julian has offered his time for that. So we'll say the first 20 people go on to his page on the Profitable Leader Summit website. You can go on there. You can have the information. Sign up, get some time with him. You're not going to want to miss it. So I would hustle. Personally, if I was watching, I would go try to book the first session for sure. I know every time that I spend with him is brilliant. And you just never know what you're going to get, but I always get something, if not more than that. So thank you for that. I appreciate appreciate you taking that time to offer people that you don't even know yourself an insight and how to not just profitable money, but profitable their life. So I appreciate that a lot.
So thank you as well. It's been great, you know, being here talking to you, and I'm sure it's going to be interesting for some people watching this. I think I love the concept. It's an angle that I think I've never taken, because it's usually very one-sided. And I think this is a very holistic approach, which, I think I've never in one part spoken about all these parts in once, because either it's about your great success or your great failure, or how to fundraise. So I think I love this approach. So very well done on sort of coming up with this concept. I think it's interesting, and I cannot wait to hear the other people's interviews. Honestly, I'm sure you got some very interesting takeouts from those conversations. So yeah.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And actually it's grown organically, and that's the brilliant part about this is, I thought about profitability and I thought, oh, everyone wants money, but then I thought, but it's more than that. And every time I talk to another guest like yourself, what comes out of it is to have the profit. And everyone, by the way, and anyone watching, there's not one leader on here that is completely overlapped. We overlap with culture. We're in service of, we're humans first. We're all that. We've been there. We've tripped and fallen, gotten back up. We've, proven business growth, et cetera. But everyone comes from different parts of the world, and they come from, the different genders, and they come from different industries, but it's a lot of the same gives. And so, yeah, it's a holistic thing, to be a profitable leader, it's gotta be a holistic give. It can't just be, I want money or I want, So I appreciate that. I'm glad that served you as well. And I know I learned on this session as well. And I look forward to more, actually. I think it'll be fun to create more. So
me too. Definitely. Yes.
Yeah. Amazing. So thank you so much, Julian, again. And thank you everyone for being here with us, with Julian, for yourself, actually, because you didn't have to take the time, but you did. And I know you're probably curious about who he is, but you also gave yourself the time to step out of yourself and hear somebody else and what they've gone through, and identify or not identify, or take something, put it in your pocket and go try it out that day. Just one thing. Don't have to boil, like someone told me, don't boil the ocean. I try to boil the ocean versus a cup. So, but yeah, thank you for being here for yourself. Thank you for being a part of this, this event. And we're so excited for you to hear the other people. And like Julian said, it's just really been magical. So again, thank you everybody. And we'll see you soon. Thank you for showing up and listening to the We Leaders podcast. If we said something today that resonated with you, challenged you, had you lean in just that much more, I would love to hear from you. Connect with me directly at weleaderspodcast.com or email me at connect@pendulumglobal.com. And while you're on the website, make sure to download your free gift. We create one new for you every month. With this podcast, we're building a global community of leaders who want to level up, the leaders of the future. This is a movement. If you know somebody who would benefit from this message, this podcast, or the communities and services that we're creating, share this out using the social media buttons on this page. If you'd like to subscribe, then you can get automatic updates of the new podcast episodes by subscribing on the podcast app on your mobile device. We appreciate you showing up. So if you go to your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star review and your authentic feedback and what you want to hear on this podcast, because what this is created for you, by you, so that we can level up together. This is a movement. Join us. Welcome to creating your legacy. Now let's go build history.